Hi, folks. Welcome to Epochs of the Lotus Eaters, episode 57, Marcus Antonius. I'm joined by Beau, of course, and we're going to be discussing the controversial Mark Antony.
I don't know if he's all that controversial.
Is he not?
But he's certainly an interesting character.
Yeah.
Most historians, the ancient sources, all seem to sort of more or less agree.
Yeah.
But he's not sort of evil. But he's ultimately a failure.
Well, we'll debate that as we go along, right? Carry on.
Okay, well, where to begin?
No. Just before we start, then. Yeah, I agree. He's not evil. He's sort of a brash nobleman who has an expectation out of life and he's not as good as he purports to be either. He's got several personal failings. One of them being indulgence.
Yeah.
And it's not that he can't be a competent military commander or organizer or anything like that. It's just he doesn't really seem to know when to buckle down, as I recall.
Yeah, no, that's definitely part of it. He seems like a libertarian. He's debauched.
Yes.
He's into all sorts of excesses.
Yes, that's why I use the word indulgence.
Yeah. We get into it. A chunk of this story will be sort of the slanging match back and forth between Octavian and Mark Antony. And they're both accusing each other of all sorts of things.
And the brilliant thing about that is if there's one thing you can't describe Octavian as, it's degenerate. You know, he was the Mr. Morality, Mr. Piety, enforcing the public morals of Rome. And then Mark Antony screwing everything and, you know, not sniffing everything, but, you know, taking every drug, drinking every drink, eating every food. It's remarkable how polar opposites they are.
They tried to cast those aspersions against Octavian, but they didn't really ever stick.
How could they?
Like they said, he's...
Octavian on an empire-wide thought patrol. Like, yeah. Like, sorry.
Yeah, insisting people get married and have children. Yeah. Doesn't seem too perverse, does it? Yeah. But...
this guy's the radical.
In the speech that Cassius Dio puts in the mouth of Antony just before Actium, the culminating battle, the big one, he says that Octavian's price for being Caesar's heir was his body, sort of thing. And it was really effeminate that he would sort of... He would burn off the hairs on his legs with hot shells.
Really?
Really weird ancient thing. Yeah. But it seems like no one really believed it. Everyone was like, oh, yeah, no one believes that. It's obviously a slur. But yeah.
Nice try, Mark.
He was apparently a little bit effeminate, but still was just really into family life and family values and things. So it's sort of clutching at straws, I think.
Just very traditionally Roman conservative.
Yeah.
You know? And don't get me wrong, there's... You've seen HBO's Rome, right?
Yeah.
The portrayal of Octavian and Antony in that I actually thought was a good way of capturing the essence of the characters. Mm. You know, the kind of people they come across. Mark Antony being a bolshy, boisterous, womanizing, you know, drunk, but competent in his way and loyal to Caesar. Whereas, you know, Mark Antony comes across very reserved, conservative, and effeminate's not quite the right word, but less masculine in many ways.
And calculating.
Yeah, well,
sort of. I did think that depiction of the young Augustus, Octavian, was quite good.
Yeah,
because actually changed actor between series on
which
that.
Which is a risky thing to do, yeah.
But I thought in different ways, both actors were quite good. I thought James Purfoy, the actor who played Mark Antony in that, almost saved the whole season. I mean, I quite like that HBO Rome.
Oh,
but
if it
weren't for him, it would have been...
Yeah.
It would have been a lot poorer.
Yeah.
I thought his performance sort of saved it from being quite poor.
Yeah.
Because they depict it quite well. And the screenwriters that wrote that also, I think, did quite a good job.
Yeah.
Their depiction of Cicero was also very good, I thought. Yep. So Mark Antony's life is bound up with that of Caesar in the first instance, and then all the great players of this age, so Cicero Octavian, who they're sort of nominally at different points supposed to be on the same side. They're in the Caesarian camp, but it ends up coming to blows. But
well, this is the consequence of any victory in a civil war, isn't it? The Pompeian faction that I represent have been defeated, and now it just becomes the two people with the contradictory personalities in the Caesarian camp.
Yeah, I mean, so should we sort of whiz through a bit that earlier stage,
Let's begin with, like, you know, Mark Antony's early life. Okay, where did he come from?
So he was from a minorly noble family. They weren't nobodies. They were patricians, I believe, which means sort of by your blood, you're aristocratic. But
the upper crust of Roman society that can trace its lineage back a few hundred years. So,
but like a lot venerable. Of aristocracy, there's you can be a very minor member of it with not really any money, and you can go all the way up to the very, very top of society. Well, so his family weren't that. They didn't have a particularly a large amount of money. Mm. So although he wasn't a complete pleb, a complete nobody, he came from...
He had the right blood.
They were poor.
Same with Caesar's family as well.
The thing about Caesar's family is that they were extremely aristocratic. The name was extremely venerable. But by the age of Caesar, when Caesar was a little boy, they just didn't really have much money, and their name had been important generations ago. Mm. Whereas Mark Antony's family didn't even really enjoy that particularly. Again, like I say, not plebs, but they're just not. Their name isn't steeped in consoles and triumphs and things. Yeah. Their family name. So in his early life, he one of the things to bring up is he was bisexual. I suppose we would say now. They didn't really have any concept of that particularly, but he did have a male lover who got him in debt.
I don't think Mark Antony cared.
No.
He doesn't seem to be, just everything you read about him, he just comes across very forthright in these things.
Yeah. I think he actually mentioned it in the last one about Pompey, just very quickly to mention, is that you could take male lovers.
Yeah.
As long as you're the dominant partner in it, then it's like, okay. There's no problem with that, apparently, in their society.
It's not just their society either. It's lots of ancient societies didn't really... They drew the distinction in the act rather than the person the act was done with.
Right.
There was, like, the Vikings used to rape men. It's like, why are you doing that? Well, it's a sign of dominance, isn't it?
Well, I've been reading about Lawrence of Arabia, who was captured at one point by the Turks and was raped. Apparently it's really common in Islamic countries. It's just part of your punishment if you go to prison.
Yeah. Well, the chap who ended up leading ISIS used to run a gang before he was an Islamic radical, where he would run around raping boys, acts of dominance.
But if you're the submissive partner, that's terribly shameful. Yes. You probably should just kill yourself.
Then you're the Queen of Bithynia.
Right. So Mark Antony, as a younger man, had a lover that got him into crazy amounts of debt. Mm. And in fact, that's part of his story going forward. Like lots of different people throughout history just lived their whole life in debt. Like Caesar himself was always millions of sesterces in debt. So anyway, he was also in the army. And before he was under sort of Caesar's command, he was under another general's command and was already sort of picked out as being a good officer.
Yeah.
There seems to be no doubt that he had some sort of military acumen. Sort of on the battlefield, people sort of at a glance, this guy knows what he's doing.
This seems to be his only virtue, that he's a capable soldier.
Right, yeah.
That seems to be literally the one virtue you can credit Mark Antony with.
Yeah. And being sort of personally brave.
Yeah.
Sort of. Yeah. At any point it comes in a battle, there's a point where you have to sort of pull the trigger, go all in. Mm. Well, not all battles, because everyone's different, but quite a lot of battles completely commit. And there's a great bit actually in that HBO Rome, where they show just a quick scene where one of their battles is sort of hangs in the balance.
Yeah.
And Mark Antony says, well, I'm just going to charge in then. All the reserve cavalry and me, we're all going to charge in. Someone says, is that the right? I think it might give it the line to Octavian. Is that the right thing to do? How do you know that's the right thing to do at this moment? And he says, well, when in doubt, throw the dice. When in doubt, throw the chips higher, commit. Yeah. And it's better to do that than not do that.
I mean, he was definitely a gambling man as well, he's and the thing is, you've got to admit he's an entertaining character.
Yeah, he's definitely charismatic.
He's charismatic, and as I said, personally brave, prepared to take big risks, and therefore his life is an exciting roller coaster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So whether you respect the man or not, he is at least a fun guy to read about.
Definitely. There's one very small anecdote to mention is that while Caesar was still alive, at one point they travel out to Spain and they take this sort of sickly Octavian, who's very young, sort of 15 or 16 years old at that point. And him, Mark Antony and Caesar all travel out to Spain together in a carriage. Mm. And it's just interesting that three massively important figures for history all just sort there. Of share, yeah, yeah, and what they would have spoken about, and yeah. who knows. And but that's an interesting thing. So when Caesar, well, a couple of quick things to mention before Caesar is killed. At some point before Caesar marches on Rome, before he crosses the Rubicon and marches on Rome, as we mentioned in the Pompey one, the political factions in the city are sort of trying to undermine Caesar and trying to screw him over. So Caesar has to send a couple of people to sort of act on his behalf in the Senate House and things, and in the Assembly and in the Forum. And it's Antony and another someone else called Curio that are sent as tribunes. Well, Mark Antony's a tribune anyway.
Yeah.
And they do the very best they can until the point where Pompey and Cicero and the faction, the Optimates and all Caesar's political enemies, force the issue to the point where it is clear nothing's going to get resolved, and Mark Antony and Curio have to sort of flee Rome.
And doesn't he claim to have been wounded by them?
Physically wounded?
Yeah.
Mark Antony, I can't remember. It's not in the accounts I've read recently, but it could well have been. It was touch and go.
I'm sure that he's physically chased out and they're assaulting him. Maybe I'm
there's different. It might not be at this stage because there's different stages than once. There's all sorts of reversals and things.
Yeah. So it's been a few years since I last read about Mark Antony.
But it might have been actually because I believe at that juncture. You've still got all the street mobs, street fighting, like Clodius is dead and Milo's been exiled, but there's still loads of street mobs.
Yeah.
So it could well have been actually at that point that they're chased out by a Pompeian mob.
It might
could
have.
Well have been actually.
Yeah, I'm not going to commit to it though.
Again, I say this in a fair few and I hope people aren't tired of it, but this is a fairly complicated story. The first bit of the Civil War between Caesar dying and Mark Antony and Octavian being the last two standing, that whole period is really quite messy.
Oh, yes.
And we're going to have to skate over it a fair bit, and there'll be whole episodes I'm going to miss out, I'm afraid, because it will take, again, 8 episodes to do it real justice. But there you go. One of the big things to mention, again, before Caesar dies, is that at one point he's celebrating in Rome, and sort of a very famous episode is that Mark Antony tries to put a laurel crown on Caesar's head, hoping that the crowds will acclaim it, but they don't. Everyone's sort of either deathly silent or they're sort of tuts and jeers and boos. And
Caesar's like, don't be silly, only Jupiter wears the crown.
Mm.
Yeah, it's very famous and probably confected.
It could well be. I mean, it's sort of a perfect story that Caesar gets to decline the laurel crown.
Yeah.
Some people say either the episode didn't happen at all or it was they'd hoped that it would be accepted.
Mm.
And Caesar sort of reads the moment and then declines it, but anyway.
I'm sceptical on it.
It does seem that quite often in history things seem a bit too perfect.
It feels like a sort of, you know, Pyrrhus and the elephant story. Right. Oh, he brought me in and he had the elephant that was supposed to surprise me. It's like, really, you got surprised by an elephant? You know, come on, you know. I don't believe you. You know, it's a nice story, but I don't think it was true. But anyway.
So when Caesar is assassinated, well, apart from anything else, Mark Antony was supposed to be among his bodyguard to personally protect him.
Well, before we get to the assassination, I mean, like, Mark Antony accompanies Caesar into Gaul, right?
Yeah, oh yeah, he's with him for quite a few years before 44.
He's campaigning through Gaul with Caesar. He's a veteran soldier, you know, and obviously some sort of captain in his army. Obviously has personally seen a lot of combat, you know, he's probably killed a lot of Gauls, as you say, is personally brave and is deeply loyal to Caesar.
Oh, yeah.
You know, this is one of the things that, again, okay, second virtue of Mark Antony. He's not a traitor, you know. He's a lot of bad things, but he's not a traitor. He seems to have the complete trust of Caesar and doesn't seem to betray it. So that's good. Even, okay, trust the guy who overthrows the Republic. I mean, okay, well, it's good that you're loyal to that guy, you know. So two virtues, good soldier, trustworthy. That's it.
And well, I suppose one of the other things is that he's a bit more than just sort of a trusted adjutant.
He's a friend sort
of,
as well.
Well, yeah, yeah. And that. But I was going to say he's sort of, there's nothing remotely formal, but he's thought of as sort of second in command in a way. Well, once Caesar is assassinated, there's not much other than Octavian. Yeah. There's no real rival to be the head of the Caesarian party. It's sort of Mark Antony's sort of the obvious, the only one really. So on the day, on the Ides of March, Mark Antony was physically with Caesar alongside him. And part of the conspiracy was a sort of an elaborate ruse to keep Mark Antony talking on the steps outside so that Caesar would be alone in the Senate House, which goes to plan. All goes to plan.
Should have been in there.
Because would also have had lictors. Mm. Lictors are a thing.
Lictors are basically Roman bodyguards.
Yeah, yeah. And so a big part of the plan, really, the most elaborate portions of it, because in the end it's let's just crowd round him and stab him. It's very low key.
Yeah, but it's also there is a part of me that thinks, I mean, Mark Antony would have been armed, and there is a part of me that thinks, well, he probably would have been able to fend off a few of these Roman senators. You know, a bunch of old men with knives. Mark Antony might have been able to do something about that.
Maybe, yeah. No, absolutely. And Caesar himself,
even though
he's sort of middle-aged now, there's loads of accounts of him having
sword of the daggers
and fighting, literally fighting Gauls and things. And when the first person stabbed him with a stylus, he just sort of grabbed it and it's like, what do you think you're doing? Like, and he's like, oh, actually, I was 40 against one or whatever, you know. He was personally brave. But so they sort of, the most elaborate bits of the coup was to keep Mark Antony outside, which works.
Yeah.
And so when he realizes what's this commotion inside, what's going on, it's too late because they, you know, you can stab someone very quickly in just a few seconds. Yeah. You can be stabbed multiple times in a matter of seconds.
Yeah.
So it's too late. And he realizes, if you can imagine, so they probably want to take out our entire faction. So I am moments away from death right now.
Yes.
But they don't kill him. Brutus, who was arguably among the sort of most important minds for the conspiracy, they did talk about whether they should kill other people in Caesar's party. Like, he had a few freedmen and a few slaves that were absolutely key bureaucrats and really important. They said, we should probably kill them all. And Mark Antony and some of Caesar's family, any male heirs and things.
And Machiavelli
just
would
like
agree.
Machiavelli would have told them to. Brutus, who is obviously a descendant of the Brutus.
And he's like a son to Caesar as well.
Yeah.
This is one of the things that people... Yeah. This was what was misrepresented in HBO's Rome. The age difference was not as great as it was in real life. And in real life, like, he was literally like 20, a generation younger than Caesar, and Caesar had been a sort of fatherly figure towards him. And so this is what makes the high drama of it all the more exquisite. It's like, oh my God, you're literally betraying your father here. You know, it's like, Republic, you know. It's like, well... Okay, got to do the job though.
Yeah, there's a few things in that HBO Rome that are just completely not right, just completely fictional. Like, they have Mark Antony having an affair with Octavian's mum.
Yeah.
That didn't happen. There's nothing about that in any of the sources.
Yeah.
There's got a few different things like that.
I mean, it's not, you know, the most implausible thing in the world or anything.
No.
But it just didn't.
And it made for a good story that when she's betrayed, because they did marry her to Octavian's sister. Mm. That is true. That's all real. But anyways... Oh, and they had Caesar had an affair or some sort of liaison with Brutus's mother. Not too sure about that as well. Although there's anyway, there's a few bits in that HBO which are just made up for the story.
Yeah. But it's annoying how they missed that kind of, in that you don't get the feeling of closeness of Brutus and Caesar that comes across when you read the sources.
Right.
And this is something that they specifically stress, all of them stress, is that this is a betrayal, a really deep betrayal. And, you know, you can imagine, this is why Shakespeare has Et tu, Brute? You know, even you, that's not a historical line or anything.
Yeah, it's from the Shakespeare.
Yeah, but it's, you know, it captures the spirit of it. Even you, Brutus.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And what Caesar didn't know or couldn't have known is not only is it even you, he was the leading mind, or one of the leading minds.
Yeah.
Well, he didn't come up with it himself, but he became the leader of it in terms of gravitas.
Yeah.
And he'd said, because Cicero particularly wanted Mark Antony and others to be executed. We'll get into that in a moment.
Based Cicero.
And Brutus says, no, we're not going to act as tyrants. We're going to kill one tyrant because that's what we're sort of morally obliged to do in their minds. But we're not just going to start murdering loads of people.
To watch the full video, please become a premium member at lotuseaters.com.